Of that takeaway and then like re-enter with the drums. This is Swan
and this is Nasa,
and you're listening, to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. Today we have Greg Kerkorian, who's been on the show before.
Kerkorian.
Like Kirk, Captain Kirk,
and yeah.
Kirk
Orion,
or
like
Ian.
Or Kirk Orion.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Kerkorian is the correct Armenian last name, but mine is a bastardization, so there you go.
It's a really nice name. That's why I had to say it again.
Me gusta.
And you're here today specifically promoting Plumb Bunt, but also all your other projects.
I mean, I'm probably...
You're a man of many projects.
Yeah, I'll probably be here every 6 months telling you, like, it's completely changed.
And this is what I'm doing now.
Like, I'm a juggler.
Brilliant.
Right.
Tell
no,
us
that's
about
never gonna
how
happen.
Words
I've tried.
Have influenced your juggling.
I've tried.
I can't do it. Can you juggle?
No. But I've practiced. I've worked very hard.
At
I can
not juggling.
Kind of be able to do it. Like, I can juggle two balls, like, once.
That does not count at all. I'm
I
not
can
even
do
lie to you.
No, it's really bad, but I know the, like, I know the technique. I just haven't mastered. I'm book smart, juggling-wise. Just not practice smart.
That's like me and everything. I'm like, let me read all the books about it, and then I'm like, I don't know how to do that.
Where I worked, they had, that was one of the classes, was clowning. Circus classes. Mm-hmm. So everyone who got out of NYU grad acting knows how to juggle, and so I've always been, like, really jealous.
How did that happen? I feel like no one talked about circus classes, and now it's, like, always comes out.
It's just a given.
What happened?
Because there's necessary skills to be obtained from circus. I can do a pogo stick, so I'll just...
Pogo stick is way cooler than juggling. Are you kidding me? Pogo stick rocks.
I wish I could do a unicycle. That's like my secret dream.
I don't know. Unicycles are so like self-obsessed. They're like, look at me. I'm only on one wheel.
It's only one wheel. Yeah, that means only I can ride it.
Yeah, exactly. There's something there, right?
No handlebars for anyone to sit on. Mm-hmm. No basket for your groceries.
Right, whereas you can carry someone on your back on the pogo stick.
Because you can't do that on a
pogo
unicycle.
Sticks always make me think of Rocco's Modern Life. He like had that jackhammering thing.
Oh yeah.
Great, we're off to a great start. Thanks so much for being here. So first of all, I want to help our listeners find satisfaction if they read saw the thing on social media. So will you talk to us first a little bit about your experiences recently showing at FlameCon. Sorry, wrong one, not Comic-Con. FlameCon, and then also you just did the New York art.
Right, so I was helping, first of all, I feel like the way that you worded it, I wasn't sure if people would think that I actually was like showing at the New York Art Book Fair.
Yeah, you were there.
And I was there actually helping somebody else's that has like a famous zine. So they're both interesting because in one case, I'm like putting together the whole table and like representing my like lifestyle brand. I don't really want to call it that, but it's like kind of becoming a nebulous thing. So then you call it a lifestyle brand. So literally.
You're just branding yourself.
Yeah. I mean, people ask you like what it is, and that makes them stop being like, I'm totally confused by you. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, so I get it. That just means you can do anything you want. And it's gay. So it's a gay lifestyle brand, basically. Like, oh, you made a hat and a, like, and zine or whatever. So it's, like, a gay lifestyle. Whatever. That's not the point. The point is, like, I'm focused on the projects. But when people ask me what it's kind of turning
into.
It's
a way to encapsulate it that they can understand.
Right. So, you know, well, so I'll get back to FlameCon in a second. But then at New York Art Book Fair, I'm helping somebody else who has a zine that's been around for ages. But Art Book Fair has kind of, like, a half art fair, half book fair quality, so it's like in a middle zone, which is really interesting. And then on his table he had this classic gay zine, underground gay zine, but then also like all these works of art, basically like actual pieces of art and editions and stuff like that.
What's the zine, if people...
It's called Straight to Hell. If you're a gay person, it's pretty likely that you've seen or heard of this zine. Mm-hmm. It's really weird. It was like basically started by this guy, Boyd McDonald, and I mean, it's weird in an awesome way. It's weird in that it was started by this guy, Boyd McDonald, and it was like, there was like being sent out by a mailing list kind of, and it had really dark content, and it's the concept is that it's like anonymous sex stories, people just sending in their stories of, but in the 1970s, it started, they could be, you know, what's awesome about it is it's like, I'm a trucker, I pass through this town. And, you know, I slept with the, like, priest, and then I saw him at church the next day. And, you know what I mean? It might be something like that, but they can also be even crazier and dark. Like,
you never know what to expect.
Own the original ones because they had such illegal content in them, to be clear. People can read between the lines. No, like, I mean, they're illegal to possess. The images that they show are illegal to possess. Wow. Read between the lines.
Intense.
But in any case, that also means that it's, like, a legit blue-collar... Like, not pretentious. Like, when we think zines of the 90s, at this point, it's almost become, like, pure, like, art, we think, with a capital A.
Yeah.
But this was not that. This was, like, a rag.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, a trashy rag. But it's cool because it's, like, real people's... There's, like, a realness.
Yeah. There's always intrigue in... I mean, that's why so many story collections exist and why storytelling is still such a big thing is because we need that, like, humanness of, like, this really happened to someone.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like as things develop, in almost any art form, it gets harder and harder to connect to that, like, earnestness. It gets, like, refined in a way. So you're like, oh,
now... And filtered, maybe.
It gets both refined and filtered. So maybe, you know, the elegance of the storytelling increases, oh, there's so many more film techniques we recognize in film, let's say. Mm-hmm. But people are also so conscious of those film techniques that
and
there
the
can
things
be...
that you can, like, build just with the tools that we have now versus the tools that we... didn't have even like 20, 30 years ago.
Right.
Hello.
What?
That was a weird ring in the studio.
I don't know
and
what
I
that is.
No idea where it came from.
Okay, so, well, like hopefully not a fire alarm.
So that's
no,
fun.
That was definitely like...
Maybe someone left their phone here and...
Let's roll right along, right?
Moving right along.
I don't think it was something dangerous to us.
No, I don't think so either. Someone said the magic word of the day!
Okay, well, so that was your involvement in the art fair. Will you talk a little bit about FlameCon?
The reason I even told you about the art fair when I said that I'd come on here is that... the reason I even said that is because their audiences, they're both fairs. Like, they're both where you set up a table, you rent a table. If people are aware of these things, I mean, this is a classic thing for comic book conventions. And, like, that's how comics are still disseminated and people go and interact with the, like, artists and, like, the biggest artists. You can go there. It's a cool thing about comic books, I think, is that even though, like, New York Comic Con is this enormous event, really, there's still this culture of, like, hey, we're all just, like, fans and like, you know, you can even talk to the biggest person in the industry one to one. There's like a kind of populist quality to comic books. So that's like the comic conventions. But the art book fair has a completely different audience. So I figured if you wanted to ask how that felt, like I feel like I should start with FlameCon, but then that's like a like a totally different experience. I don't know. Or whatever you want to talk about.
Well, it's your show.
Just interest sake, when are these cons?
Comic conventions?
No. The
FlameCon was...
Fair? Yeah. Art
Book Fair was last weekend, and I almost went, but then I didn't because I was tired.
But it is a really, it's a free thing at PS1, and I went last year as like just a, like not an exhibitor, and I was going to say a regular person, but I'm still a regular person. But anyway, I went last week as an exhibitor. I mean, I went last year as just like a person who was visiting the art book fair, and I thought it was an amazing experience anyway, because there's just, there's like a really, I mean, first of all, it's got like an artsy-fartsy side, which I think is fun. Like there's galleries and stuff, but next to zines, so both, that is interesting to see that clash, and the people who are there are all
I'm trying to get Nasa to look at her phone because I just texted her to see if she could check that I locked the door. But I'm not being very good at conveying
that
message.
It was really distracting.
I'm so sorry. I know, I was trying to be undercover.
I'm sorry, everyone.
Because it's an audio thing, so I didn't want to say, but now I did. And now we all know why it was strange. Yeah. And we're back.
We're back. So basically, I would totally tell people every year it comes around the same time, and it's cool. Like, you can see artsy stuff. The people around are kind of like artsy, but also like nerdy. And I don't know. It's just, I like the vibe there, and it's free. You can go to PS1. and check it out for free, so why not?
Yeah, why not?
Go.
And
it's
it
like
was
a nice
3-day thing. And
it's huge, and there's so much. So, like, if you do go, just go and, like, don't
something.
Even care. Yeah, like, don't even care about stopping at every, because I always feel nervous to stop at every table.
Well,
but
and
it's
not
an absolute
that,
death knell to your ability to survive in that
just,
space.
I love the experience of, like, walking around, and there's just so much, and so much variety, and so many ideas actualized that you can just kind of, I like to see what I'm repulsed by or drawn to, like,
and
anything that, like, gives me a strong reaction, and I, you know, like to step into that and look at that closer. So that's an inevitable experience if there's...
The Gagosian Gallery, do you know them?
No.
I mean, the Gagosian, it's, like, one of the premier, like... anyway, this is, like, an important art thing. But randomly, they had a tattooing station where, like, they asked six famous artists to design a tattoo, and they would tattoo them onto you,
like,
in limited editions if you paid $240. You could get one of, like, six of this tattoo. So
that
I'm just saying it's, like, a weird space.
Alley.
There's, like, I know that is
yeah,
up your
there's
alley.
So much random
but
stuff.
But, yeah, like, anything can go there is what I like. But that's also, like, premier gallerists, like, big-time,
like,
people. So it's also not, like, FlameCon, which I absolutely adore, but...
Not as DIY feeling? Is
DIY,
that,
yeah.
Or that's the one.
Yep. not as, like... Like, while remaining some sort of, like, you feel like, oh, I could see people who are just trying to get their work out there. There's also, like, a side of people who don't need to get their work
out
there.
Yeah, they're just there because...
That are, like, selling, like, at an art fair where you're like, damn, like, you're a gallery. Like, you know what I mean? This is, like, it's just an interesting clash. I found that people who were really into, like, art scenes and stuff that I was talking to kind of found it weird. They were like, oh, I don't, like, it's not artsy enough, which I thought was interesting. So maybe because my sensibilities lie on the zine side of that spectrum, I find it kind of, like, just a nice amount of, like, flirtation with the art world. I don't know. I don't see myself as, like, wandering. You know, obviously, I'm not, like, wandering through galleries being, like, finally, like, this is the piece I've been looking for my collection. So I don't really, you know what I mean? It's hard for me to look.
Yeah, I guess maybe your motivations affect your experience.
You're going, I mean, as a not a consumer, but, like, as an appreciator of these types of spaces, you're going in. Actually, it's a good place to go into FlameCon as well.
Yeah,
you know, they cater to, like, a person, like, a type of person. So if I'm, like, a zine-y person. So when I go in, I'm, like, really interested in why this person started this thing 6 issues ago and, you know, where they're at in that process and stuff like that. And if you're more into collecting art, you know what I mean? I don't know. I can't speak for that person. But anyway, it's interesting that they're together, though, for me, because I'm always like, I want to see it. I'm kind of like a see it all.
Sure. And revisiting FlameCon, I just would like for you to briefly talk about the things that you had created.
My actual work?
Yeah. You had 2 coloring books that were really fun and then some shirts. And then.
So last year I did FlameCon, and it was my first time tabling. So I used to write poetry. That was my main thing. But I did it very much as, like, a personal practice. I, like, theoretically wanted to get it out to the world and sometimes kind of, like, send them off to preposterously large institutions, kind of, like, very childish as far as I look back on it. But, like, this kind of, like, getting ahead of yourself kind of thing. Like, I wrote it for myself, and I was like, that's how I want it to be because I find this poignant and powerful. Mm-hmm. And then I'm, like, going to send it off to the New Yorker because that's who's supposed to be, like, recognizing your genius or whatever. But I think the reason what I realized that what in retrospect was like what I was really doing, it was a very important process to me, and I still occasionally, I want to get back to writing more because as I focus more on art, It's like you have to shove my writing aside.
Yeah, it's like if you start giving more attention to one aspect of your creativity, the others kind of decrease. I mean, they just decrease just because your output is focused on.
You only have so much energy, you know, and you're like, how hard is it to just improve? I'm not the world's best artist at this point. It's not like I can stop developing technically, you know what I mean? So it's like I still need to put tons of time into just focusing just on drawings, and I don't even see myself like ultimately as like just not even just a comic book artist in the sense of like, I mean, like there's people who are like, I want to draw primarily, and I'm not even that person. I'm a person who wants to write and draw. So I think ultimately I'll end up technically not as great as others, but like nice with a style. That's kind of where I see myself gearing.
Let me ask you, all these outlets for your creative energy, I was going to ask you specifically to drawing. Knowing the technique allows you to express yourself, and I think that developing the ability to express yourself in like across a multitude of medias just gives you different ways to step into yourself, maybe?
Absolutely. Well, drawing for me has been actually like very therapeutic. The reason I moved into comics from poetry is that I had been drawing for so my whole since birth.
Like doodling and
automatically.
A lot of times people stop drawing and or they don't. I feel like there's two clear paths.
Not me. I was like the kind of person who had just like drawings on every, like my high school notebooks are like, you know, one or two lines of notes and then a border of like intense amount of drawings that are overlapping and stuff like that. So, but you know, my parents are Eastern European immigrants. So it kind of like, it was a strong chorus of like, this is like, yeah, sure, you can do this as once you figure out how to actually be successful. This can be like your successful hobby or whatever, which is fine. You know what I mean? I mean, that's not like a sad sack story, but it also, I didn't have the kind of personality to be like, fuck you, this is what I love at all. It took adulthood and coming out and facing blah, blah, blah. And like for me to really get adrift from that and be like, you know what, whatever. If I'm a failure and I go to my deathbed, I'm sorry, everything I think of is in these terms, but if I go to my deathbed having failed at art, it seems like that's the person I'm going to end up being, because ultimately, like every time I get into some kind of like promising professional career, I'm like, fuck this, I got to go. So you know what I mean? It's like I kind of... Yeah. I didn't fail into it, but it's like eventually you just stop fighting your own tendencies a little bit more. And that's kind of how I think I fell into comics too.
I mean, there's something to be said for like having goals and working hard, but there's also something to be said for like following trails that seemingly lead nowhere.
Right.
And just because it's something that you love doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. So then I moved into comics, and then FlameCon last year was the first time I tabled, which means that I paid X amount of dollars, which is an interesting story because, like, basically they were Kickstartering it, and I support the idea of having a gay comic book festival because, like with many minorities, when you are in, like, it's not like there's no gay creators in comic books. Like, a super famous artist that's, like, one of the most important people to ever draw Wonder Woman is named Phil Jimenez. He teaches at SVA. I don't know him personally, but this is, like, you know, there's a known name. There's like one of the big, it's not like, my God, we're crawling out of the darkness. Obviously, gay people are.
Or like they were never there and now they're everywhere.
Yeah, there's nothing like that. Yeah, and Phil Jimenez is like, has drawn the most mainstream of stuff. So it's like, I'm not even trying to insinuate that that's like, that's why this is necessary, because it's like, gays have never had a place. But to me, when somebody announced a gay comic convention, I was like, with a lot of minority identities, and this is the one that I can actually speak to, you're like, yeah, but when it's us, we actually get to express our diversity instead of getting ghettoized into a corner.
Oh,
where
like,
it's like,
oh, if you want to see the gay artist, they're over here.
Right, it's exactly. Like, and there's like me, two other people, and one lesbian, and we're like wearing our gay,
we're
like waving our gay flag and being like, yeah, exactly. You have this burden of representation.
Well, it becomes like that's really the onerous focus of your identity rather than your art and your personal like experiences.
Right, right, absolutely. So, I mean, a good example of that is when I first went to FlameCon last year. They had badges so people could
self-identify
their pronouns. Like, these are my pronoun badges. And they also had completely gender-neutral bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say something grotesque, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I never actually wrote the blog post I wanted to write about this.
Here we go.
That when I went into the bathroom and people were men, women, and any other gender identity were using the same space together, the bathroom is such a – like, this is like a idea that has been covered by other – artists and philosophers before, but it's a neutralizing space. It's a space that makes you really confront humanity. And I found that shockingly poignant to be like, yeah, girls should fart in this bathroom while I'm standing here.
I have...
Like, and I'm obviously, I'm a strong feminist, so it's not like a shock to me, but like,
But like, yeah.
But it still felt good. It was like, yeah, I hope you fart as loud as you can, like right in this room with men, and not be ashamed, right? Like it kind of had that like forcing you into like, into human presence with one another.
Poop.
Yeah, we all poop. Like, so it, you know.
That's children's book. Did you guys see that? Everybody poops.
Everybody poops.
Everybody.
But
does.
You get what I'm saying? It felt more radical than I was shocked.
Yeah, but
that's
to
what
actually,
I'm trying to say. It
like,
felt more radical than I thought it would.
Encounter it in practice rather than just the idea of like, oh, everyone I know poops. Like,
right.
To actually.
Because like it's in my personal friendships. That's not even an issue. Like I'm not like weird like about those kinds of issues around my female friends.
But strangers.
But with strangers, it feels radical. And my point was to say that it's a gay comic convention. So this came naturally to the convention.
Yeah.
And there, so there's like this whole like there's a kind of larger politicism that is in the air. And it's beautiful. It's totally, to me, it's really poignant.
Well, and talk about your work. So you don't have to maybe go into specifics, but talk about your experience last year creating for a booth versus this year creating for your booth.
Absolutely. So last year, I mean, I bought this table because sorry that I'm going on a tangent, but so the point was that they made a Kickstarter and that wound, one of the Kickstarter prizes was like a really cheap table for what convention prizes actually are. So I kind of had it in mind in a flirtatious way to, or like I was flirting with the idea, that's what I meant to say, of like getting a table at some point, but it was very overwhelming. Whereas in this context, it was like, fuck yeah, I get to support, excuse my language, I get to support, it's okay. All right. I get to support a cause that I totally believe in, but I also am forced into having a table. Do you know what I'm saying?
Ooh,
and then
yeah.
Plump Bunk came out of that because I was running late on, or no, I had a couple of things, but I wanted to have something else that was a big project on the table. And I delusionally told myself that collaborating with people meant that I could get more illustrations, so I made this calendar. And then I was like, well, that's not Gregory Kerkorian's calendar. I'm not really into the vainglory of that kind of a notion. I'm really way more into the collective thing. Mm-hmm. So I was like, so I made up Plump Bunt because I was like, it's literally a name I wanted to throw on the calendar. And then I was so excited about that process of collaborating, even though it was actually way more time. You know what I mean? I
probably could have drawn 5. Yeah, anytime you add a person, it like adds hours
so
and hours and stress.
Right. So, but I really loved it. And I do, it's a different creative side of myself. So, I loved it. So anyway, so that ended up being one thing on the table, but like, it was kind of, I was in a corner and I like didn't know what it was like. And I did my very, like, I tend towards like a little kind of a bit of a, not even a little, a lot of a like, hammy showman shtick. Naturally in life, I'm a little bit of a loud person. So I had like a shtick at that table and whatever. So that whole time I felt good about it because I got a lot of people to come up to my table. But it also felt like I was definitely somebody who had like thrown themselves into the ocean. It was like, this is cool. Like, it's definitely raging seas, but like they're fun raging seas. Like it was that kind of a feeling. Like I'm like vaguely surfing, occasionally body
You're
surfing,
like,
but
I might die.
Yeah.
You know I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah.
That's definitely what it felt like.
There's like a rush there and like a
both.
This is awesome and right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But then what does that mean? Like now I had this thing Plump on and I was like, does that mean it's a real thing now that I just put that on there? So now this year, ostensibly I was working that whole last year to get stuff ready for the con. It comes up time for the con, and I'm like, actually, I haven't done that. Like, I've worked on other things, obviously, and I've had progress in my own personal life, but it felt like I hadn't honed properly in the way that I wanted to come to the next con. Like, oh wow, I'm so ready. So leading up to the con, like a little bit in advance, I got stuff ready for Plump Bunt, like without being apologetic about that notion. So one of them were these two coloring books. One of them is a Pokemon parody, and one of them is a Final Fantasy parody. And literally, I did them because I didn't have time, and I wanted to do simple black and white sketches that didn't seem
But they're
stupid.
Also fun.
But I love those properties. And my Pokemon parody, this is very true of most of my work, it seems like just like a fun, porny idea, like Pokemon porn or whatever. But it also is a story about how masculinity is toxic and how a boy realizes he doesn't only have to fuck masculine men and how ultimately that he's like caught up in a cycle of violence even if he's not perpetrating violence, blah, blah, blah. It's all an undercurrent in there. So, you know, and I like what I like about the idea, because I want to actually, those are like demo projects kind of for a bigger book I want to do called Corrupting Your Inner Child, which is the reason that I think I want to do children's properties. I make my work pretty intuitively, but I think the intuitive reason why I want to do them with children's properties, but as porn parodies, is that I'm talking about a point in our life where all of the works we read are moralistic, are didactic in a way that, like, I think novels really shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of a sketchbook that has a children's book parody, a sketchbook parody that has, like, a really clear kind of, like, agenda in that way, mm-hmm. to me feels right. It feels like it gels correctly. Like, and then Pooh realized blank. Mm-hmm. Pooh Bear, which is another one I want to do.
Yeah.
But like,
oh, that one is
awesome. Yeah.
Well, and I think also just for something about those characters resonated as a child that I think people lose touch of being mm-hmm. an adult. So reconnecting to those characters, but in their like more adult way.
Right.
Makes sense.
Right. But also your child gay self, maybe not so much anymore, depending on where you are and who your parents are. But your child gay self was corrupted in the opposite way by society. It's a tongue-in-cheek statement, right? So constantly you're being told you're the evil one, you're a monster, without people realizing they're telling you that. So who's really corrupting your inner child? Is it like the like gay pornography and gay sexuality? Or is it a society that tells you to kill yourself every day without realizing they're telling you that? So that's all. I mean, I obviously don't want to like speak so clearly to that, because it's like, kills the art of it, but like,
but it's, I mean, that's, I mean, what's, it's an animating experience that a lot of people have when they're encountering anything about their identity or who they are that's like not widely accepted. It's just like this questioning, like, why am I like messed up?
Right. And I do wish, I refuse to not make my work gay, especially at this point. Who knows? Maybe there'll be a point at which I don't think gay themes are so incredibly important to my work. I don't see it at this point, but I refuse not to make my work gay, because why can't it be gay and something else? But I dream of creating work that's good enough, or like the day coming when people are open-minded enough that a straight person reads that same corrupting your innocence thing and says, I get it. This is both about like salacious, fun images of people fucking and gay identity only in a way, but it's also me. I'm connecting to that as well, but in a gay context, not the reverse. Not like, oh, we have to make this a straight story so that now you understand that this is about like appreciating your inner, you know what I mean, your inner whimsy or whatever. Yeah. It's like, so, but anyway, that's not really on my agenda, because at this point, A, I'm going to create what I'm going to create, and B, like, ultimately, for me, it's enough to connect to gay people at this point. Like, you know what I mean? I don't need to be Sears or whatever. I can just be Plum Bum, which is, like, an aggressive pornographic. The reason it's a pornographic company is because I think nothing says I refuse to, like, give a, like, small caveat on my identity more than saying, like, I'm going to have gay porn. You know what I mean? Like, really.
Sure, yeah.
If the straight person is going to appreciate it, they have to appreciate it with a truly non-homophobic open mind, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have to be able to see men touching each other. Like, is that, that's what draws me to porn, is that it's like a real challenge.
Yeah, there's kids screaming upstairs as we're in the studio. I don't know if that's catching on any of the mics. Yeah, I was just thinking as I'm sitting here listening to you talk that I don't want to interrupt you, because I love the way you kind of like, okay, let me tell you this, and let me tell you this, and let me tell you this, and then let's like weave it together.
It's like David Foster Wallace light, like very, very poor and light quality. David Foster Wallace.
Talk a little bit more. I realize in the course of our relationship that you engage in a lot of collaborations with a lot of people, and that's something that solidifies friendships for you. But do you want to talk a little bit about the other reasons why you like collaborations?
If I'm really honest,
please be really honest.
And it's true of why I love tabling at both of these events as well. I just uniquely, and I'm not flattering myself, totally fall in love with people all the time. And I want to know what it is about them. I really do. And I want to know what it is about them that makes them passionate and excited. And the only thing that turns me off about people is when it's quite the opposite, when it's like, they're so caught up in presenting themselves in a way that's not even supposed to be flattering to me, but like that's caught up in social notions and stuff like that. Now, I don't hate those people.
I think of them just as like not being aware, not being conscious of even themselves.
Like,
I feel like if you start to find what makes you special, other people see that too. But if you never put in the work to be like, what makes me special, then you're just...
Right. And
you.
That's not to knock.
That sounds so horrible.
Yeah, exactly. That's not fair to like totally write off
people's
experience.
Yeah, it's not exclusively. And I mean there's lots of brilliant people that have they don't have the first clue about themselves.
Right.
And everyone else can see it, but they can't. That's like a common trope too. But so it's both. It's a spectrum, but
right. And so like I'm also from Queens, New York. I grew up with like a proliferation of different identities to myself. So like it's very deeply important to me. I mean, I love people like that. I have a lot of friends. I'm a very overly social, hyper social person to a fault, honestly, because the problem for me is
your
that
creative
I,
process happens when you're alone, but you're
right. Yeah. So
never
it's
alone.
Like, yeah. So it's like I'll just not sleep and like draw these two drawings on the bus between two hanging out with two friends. I mean, it's not quite that bad anymore, thank God, but it's been a real conscious process to try and
like reclaim
like,
your
honor
own
the side of myself that wants to create, not just the side of myself that wants to connect and fall in love with people. But that said, that love, that genuine love and dedication that I have to
it
people and
you.
The reason it motivates me, it makes me feel not crazy because I get kind of anxious when I'm on my own. I'm like a very extroverted person in that regard. But also, like I was saying, being from Queens and there's like this proliferation, there's all these different identities that I've engaged with in my life. I see that and I just, in a very real way, I'm conscious of the fact that like my perspective is really beautiful, I think, as well. But like so is like an Ecuadorian friend that was young and was into punk and like something that I've like never seen set like on television. Like there's like hundreds of those people that... millions, gazillions of people that have never been represented, never had a voice, and whatever. And it's not, it sucks to me because I feel like it's hard to say that and say, like, it really hurts me that my friend, like, was never saw themselves represented without sounding like you're, like, trying to earn points or whatever. And it's so that's a difficult thing. And I try, you know, I try not to gloat or whatever about it. But when you ask me about collaboration, it's like, because I'm very conscious of the fact that as much as, like, I've never seen a gay Eastern European kid that, like, operates in the way he does in Queens and whatever and grew up and then came into the city, that everybody has their own little story, and I want to honor mine and I want to create my own stuff. It's also, like, there's so many stories out there, and I really don't feel like I want to, like, that makes me think that I should necessarily tell all of them. And the only answer I can think of is collaboration.
Yeah, well, and I think of the... I do think that there's something to be said for permission, which I feel like is something that, for whatever reason, you've become very good at. And so part of you falling in love with people is, like, gives them permission to be who they are and do what they want to do. And you're just like, yeah.
Right.
You say yes. And I feel like it's a weird... stupid thing, but for some reason we get it into our heads like, oh, but I couldn't do that because X. And so for you, you're like, no, you could do that. Mm-hmm. And so to give that opportunity to your friends who have these stories to tell that are so, like, you know, specific to them, so it makes them unique in that sense, but it's inevitable that someone else is going to resonate with it.
Right. And I said that along ethnic lines because, like I said, I grew up specifically with a proliferation of ethnicities, so I feel like that is something that I'm keen to, but or a cornucopia of ethnicities, but like, and also because I guess I'm a child of immigrants from a place nobody cares about or knows about pretty rightly, so like,
oh.
No, it's fine. I mean, Romania is a small country,
so
it shouldn't, or Armenia, both should not be like number one on your radar.
I have a secret wish to have that heritage. I have like family that come from America, like, we're one of the first, and I'm just like, oh, so boring, I don't have anything. Like, I know, it's just like. I always craved an interesting story with my parents growing up because I felt like my parents' story was so boring.
Well, I don't know. Your background religiously is interesting.
Yeah. Well, I guess, like, an interesting thing to other people that I'm just like, oh, roll
but
my eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
That's how I feel. Like, I'm all ethnicities. I am everything.
You are everything.
I am the world.
Which means you can be anything.
But, like, I'm like, yeah, that's, I'm American. That's what that is.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Eastern European is my, like, you know, blood heritage, but. It's like everything.
I mean, and ultimately, I'm an American as well. It's like the difference between me and my parents is stark. You know what I mean?
This
obviously.
Is true.
And I'm like, I'm born here. So it's not. I happen to identify strongly with these things. My sister, way less so, for instance.
Mm. But she's older or younger?
Older, but she's like totally different than me. She's first of all, she speaks the languages better than I do. And she's just kind of a doer type that's like not overthinking all this bullshit.
Oh my gosh.
So like, you know what I'm saying?
On the subway over here, I was like doodling, don't overthink.
Yeah, like, right? Like, some people really don't.
My fault in life is like, but what? Ah, just like spinning. I feel like people watching me could be like, oh, she's overthinking it.
Cranks turning in your head or something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I don't have anything else to add. As a consumer of art, comics, is there anything that's come into your world recently that you're excited about? Spotlight.
Right. I should definitely have like tons. But
I feel like you're always like reading and borrowing the most interesting books that I'm like, can I borrow this? And you're like, well, yeah, but let me finish it first. And
then I never
see it again. I'm like, I want to see this. The pictures. Okay. I think the visual aspect of the things you are carrying around is so interesting.
Yeah, I love them too. Well, I mean, I was at the art book fair. An easy answer to this is I was at the art book fair and I was going to say about friends. A problem for me is that I totally end up a cheerleader naturally. And this is true of works that I'm going to tell you about. Like, I'm always looking for, like, how excited I can be about. And people kind of, I think, it dawned on me a few days ago or, like, a week ago when I was writing back furiously and excitedly about everything I picked up. Like, you're a beautiful soul. This is a touching. Right? I was like, damn, this must seem real crazy. Like, you just handed this person this book. You know what I mean? And they're talking about, like, the depth of your soul and blah, blah, blah. But no. I don't know. That's my perspective. That's really my perspective is I'm like always looking for that. So I feel like I'm also kind of not discerning. I definitely have taste, but do you know what I mean? Like there's people who can whip out cool wrecks left and right because they're so like on that. And I'm like, I just love it all. Well, not really.
Well, because I think that's an aspect of personality, which is something that draws people to you and for you solidifies friendships. But do you think that there's like a, like do you, this is like a horrible thing to ask you to respond, but do you like rank people? Because for me, I feel like people are either in or they're out. And I'm a black and white thinker, so that like goes in alignment. I'm like, you're either an acquaintance and like whatever, or like I will do anything and everything for you.
Right.
So do you find that with your relationships?
No, I'm like on the far end of not doing that, seriously. So like, I mean, a real, like to give you an example in my romantic life,
people think
I'm like probably being totally phony when I'm like, what breaks my heart about a lot of situations. And listen, I have not been a pure angel or whatever. I've been a dick to people. It's not like I'm coming off like a saint, but that's like bullshit. But I do like have this heartbreak when I'm like, when people are like, no, you wanted to break up, so let's not talk. And I'm like, but you're, you
but
know
I
what
still
mean?
Love
but
you.
I love your collection of shells or whatever the fuck it is. But I mean, as far as ranking people, I don't know. I feel like it's something I don't actively do, but I must be doing it on some level. And I think when people notice that from the outside about the way I'm behaving towards them, mm-hmm. it could be probably distasteful because I make every person that I'm with feel like they're the most important person in the world to me because I'm in that way.
You truly feel that way.
I kind of live in the moment in that way. Yeah. I'm like, while I'm with you, you really are the most important person in the world to me. But if we don't talk 6 months, I'm also fine.
You can also, yeah, but you revisit those connections as if 6 months hasn't passed. Talk about.
Yeah, sorry, that's a side point.
Yeah, let's bring it back to maybe.
And that's how I feel about, unfortunately, about writing as well. It's like.
I love it.
I mean, there's things that are closer to me, like. I said David Foster Wallace is such a pretentious one to say, but this is how I also express myself in this like vomiting of like many, 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 many ideas and then like trying to consolidate them. And he is somebody who like exactly does that. So he happens to directly appeal to my thought process in that way, whether or not like he's also seen as like a mega genius and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, the value of what he's doing versus the value of how you think is like not something you can compare, but
I mean, I'm deeply jealous. It seems like he.
You're like
I feel
you like think I can like do me, the but
I can do the beginning. Yeah, like I can do the beginning of what you're doing, which is like engaging with way too many ideas at the same time. Yeah. But like coming to a solid, incredible conclusion that refines all
like,
of those
and
is false. Obviously.
Wait, where's the boom?
Yeah, really. And of course, I mean that's the trouble with writing or like thinking. It's absolutely. So
what
anyway, that's a person near and dear for that reason.
And you love mythology, which I just want to mention because
mythology.
I feel like it's something that a lot of people lose touch of and in so many ways that's our roots.
Such a personal way. That's weird. That's the thing about it to me. It's like since I was a little, that's really true. Since I was like, first of all, I like mythological style of writing where there's like, I'm not even talking about like a specific like Homeric piece,
like the
but
Iliad
I mean conceptually those notions where you have like big archetypes. I think it's like why superheroes appeal to me even though I think so much of it is trash is like, like, you have big archetypes and you can create big sweeping stakes and you really let ideas, like, crash against each other in this kind of like faded way.
This crazy stuff happens. My personal life been thinking a lot about the story of Icarus flying to the sun. And,
I think about that all parallels. The time. I think about it on the train on the way here.
And I know I'm like, am I a weirdo? Because I'm like, you know, walking around outside being like, flying to the sun.
I mean, the idea of it is so poignant. That's the problem, is it's so poignant. Like, first of all, that this father loved his son enough to create his dream, and that he was capable of creating his dream. That the son, is in such a state of, excitement and mirth that he can't restrict himself despite knowing, because his father is wise enough to tell him not to stop, and that ultimately that we can't trust that kind of joy is a dark and interesting point.
In remembering that they were prisoners, which is why the wings were made.
I did not think that was the case, but perhaps that's a version of the story.
Possibly. I always thought that was, really touching, because it was, their escape.
Oh, I didn't think that was the case.
But was also their demise.
That was also, just specifically the sons, because he got caught up in the wonderfulness of it.
That's even worse. I don't know that version of the tale.
Yeah, I don't know. You maybe need to brush up on my original text comprehension. Yeah. I've been thinking a lot about flying into the sun versus being grounded, just as a concept, because I feel like in a sense you have to find the balance between the two to be a whole human being. You know, you have to fly off and chase the dream, chase the sun, get burnt a little bit, but if you don't curb that with some groundedness, you are your own destruction.
Well, and a friend believes in one of my great friends and somebody I used to live with believes in a very complete system of beliefs that's an alternative system of beliefs that I won't go into at length because we could probably talk about it forever.
We have.
But one of their points is about how you have to go out like that into the world and then come back deeply into the self to analyze what happened and go out and come back in. And so it's a kind of I always think of the underwater
philosophical
sea creature.
Just it's just
that's what it's like, though. It's I think that's really fair. I think that belief is true.
For me, it makes me think of the we are all connected, and so all of this is in a sense, me. So,
right.
I don't know. It's for me, I get overwhelmed by the city, and a line that helps me is to be in the city and feel the rush and the noise. And be a part of it. And it speaks about that presence, which is flow in art, or just being with someone that you're completely enamored with. And it's nothing else matters, nothing else exists, because this is right and this is what is. So if you're on the subway and there's screaming babies and the subway's grinding and super loud, it's just being that, being there.
Right.
It's hard.
It's certainly hard. I mean, it's the city is trying. At all times, but
and we experience it in completely different ways because you're an extrovert and I'm an introvert.
Right. So that's I was going to say it can be also a great and beautiful pleasure. I mean, if you're paying attention to the way that people behave and you're interested in humanity,
or how the same situation one day infuriates you, in the same situation another day is enlightening.
Mm-hmm. I always find it interesting the days that I'm eager to watch, to people watch and to learn, versus the days that I want to completely close myself off, because that's the one thing I think New York denies you, privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to create that for yourself, but that means that you have to actively also step out of that bubble, or else you completely cut yourself off from everybody.
Yeah, totally.
Yep.
Well, my dear friends, believe it or not, we've been here for 45 minutes.
What?
Yeah. You've been listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. We've been talking to Greg Kerkorian. If you're curious about any... Did I say Kirk?
You said it right. Rocked it.
Rocking. If you're curious about him, you can find us on social media, Ink and Worm, or what are your tags? They're linked to Ink and Worm.
Yeah.
But,
I'm just... So not that good about it. But okay, so I have one which is at Greg Streak, which I put random anything I want and ostensibly maybe graphic design stuff. And then one for Plump Punt, which I hope to consistently put stuff related to that kind of content. But it's all a process. I'm always getting myself involved in too many things is the answer.
What a joy.
Which is a joy, but it's...
But also
Yeah, exactly. People are like, why don't you post more? And I'm like... Looking at them, staring at them, traumatized.
I It is interesting to me how, I mean, it kind of like goes back to like being in the city, like some days posting or like being engaged or sharing is so easy. And some days it's like, I don't know. I hate, like, I personally have days where I'm like, I hate everything. Everything is dark. Mm-hmm. I like, what am I going to put out into the world today that's going to make it like different? I don't know. The
and
darkness.
It's hard to trust that you, I mean, one of the most beautiful, one of our friends that we share.
Yes.
Just like very simply and sweetly said, like, you know, I care. I'm the person that cares what you actually have to say. But it's hard to remember that it's enough to just, you know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, these people. I know. I used to keep a list of my fan club.
Because personally,
in high school, I'd be like, these people are part of my fan club. Like, they are fans of me. For me, it was transformational.
Like, who cares about my stupid ideas? We're so inundated in a way. Not like when it comes to my art,
well,
but especially with social media.
Numbers. Like, oh,
there's billions. Like, there is billions of people. So, like, today I'm supposed to post a photo of my food.
Nothing.
Or like my drawing. Yeah, my drawings, my, or whatever.
Like, it's so like transient, and yet it also,
and yet
has,
I'm into
meaning
it when other people
do
it.
So it's such a big part of our lives. So it's like satisfying some. I mean, I have to revisit the sense of like, this is my community.
Mm-hmm.
And even
and
if,
it matters.
Even,
that's how they watch
even
you.
If it gets 5 likes, like, that's not what this is about.
Yeah.
And people really are excited to see, I don't know. You know, it's just a pass. I think social media has been great for allowing friends to have a kind of passive way of keeping.
Yeah, you're
you
still,
know,
you're
it
still,
shouldn't be
your
such a big deal, I feel like.
Still overlap, and yeah. You're able to. Yeah,
it makes it easier to reconnect later on.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, one of the things that I like the most about it is that, like, there isn't this, oh, God, I haven't talked to them for months. I can never reach out to them again. It's
just
like their page, like a thing they post. And then over time, you guys can get back to being good friends.
Or that guy that you met at the bar. That one time.
Okay.
But, you know what I mean? But you've been, like, kind of, like, keeping it cool.
Radar.
Or maybe you were in a shitty situation with your, like, person you are currently dating or whatever.
Not
the hell
was
going on.
Is, like,
I know,
referring
we're
to
totally
any...
creating a story right
This
now.
Is not true of this particular moment of my life, but it has been true before where you're like, I actually kind of think your articles are great. I'm going to start liking them.
Yeah, and then they start liking your stuff, and then you
oh my
like,
gosh.
And that's what you know.
Reach out with them and just be like, hey, I've noticed
oh my God,
we've
what
been
about
liking,
a coffee?
We should hang out.
I'd really love to share
it. Yeah, that's my tip for like picking up friends or whatever, like acquaintances. That really works. You can always tell when a person has suddenly started liking. Although that's not actually true on the other hand, because I started liking somebody's shit just because I thought what they were posting was interesting.
And they didn't notice you?
No, then they got weird. And yeah. I was like, God damn it. I actually was just like, damn, you've been killing it lately on Facebook.
That's happened to me a couple of
like,
times.
Yeah, the delicate balance between getting like happy.
Yeah, you can't be like a creep.
It's just scare people. I don't know. Part of me is like, I think I just have to live an authentic life. And if I scare people away, then... That
I'm trying.
Has to be okay.
I'm trying to say that. I'm trying
That's
to say
so
that.
Hard. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, we like to end our shows with a series of questions called Rapid Fire.
Okay.
I will start. This is my new favorite question, but it's kind of strange. So what's your favorite brag? So contextually, like you're with people, you're like, okay, well, this is the thing I'm like most proud of or excited that I did.
No, it's a great question.
We're comfortable with silence.
I'm just annoyed. I'm annoyed by how
you have like 800 things.
The phrasing isn't coming out correctly. I'm the life of a party.
You are.
I'm the life of a party. That's it. There you go.
Yeah,
I was
without,
searching for that.
But without distracting from the purpose of the party, I would add.
No, I'm Dionysus. I should have said.
There you
I
go.
I am the party.
Brought the booze. Brought the
water into wine.
Exploitations. What are we doing?
You're Dionysus and Jesus.
Cause women
all wrapped into wine.
You know, there's theories that there's syncretization.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah.
They're absolutely parallel.
But also, I cause women to tear their bullshit men to pieces. That would be a dream one day.
Nisa, do you have a question?
Oh yes.
Oh, what? Our favorite brags are the same, right?
Yeah, mine is still. Yeah. Nothing has grown for me.
Nothing has changed for me.
I have a great favorite.
I'm still working on that, though.
Like, opposite of a brag, but not an actual, not a new favorite brag.
Well, now I need to know.
Oh, no, it was just that August was, like, the shittiest month of my life. And so, like, now that's my big...
I survived.
I have had the shittiest month of my life, and it was a month ago, and that's great.
And it'll just keep getting farther away.
I know. Hopefully life will just keep getting better, though.
Yes. All up from here. Yes, can't go down.
That's how it works. It's always straight up.
This is a question I think I'm particularly interested in hearing the answer from you, and it's one of my favorites, but whatever. Was there a book or like a comic book or anything of the sort that like influenced you during puberty? Because, you know, there's always that.
Of Mice and Men.
Oh, great. Cool.
Of Mice and Men. I love tragic shit, and there's like... In general, like, so I just found that book so poignant. The fact that they were such dedicated friends. I know Mice and Men is, like, a thing we all read in school or whatever, but it's definitely the book that made me...
I've seen the play.
Well, first of all, totally read it because it's short and it's, like, very... You know what I mean? Like, you can kill that book very quickly. It's, like, 130 pages.
I'm weird that way. If you're like, you should read this, I'm like,
I know, I'm not.
That's fine, but if you ever want to kill, like, you want to read a book between books, it's like a great one because it's very short. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. I'll put it out there with no pressure and then it might happen.
Right. Yeah, there's no pressure. But, like, it's, you know, it's got so much in it. It's about, like, a real depth of friendship, which I found totally poignant. It was the book that made me, like, understand. Like, I already had those kinds of feelings and thoughts, but it was a book that made me understand how a work of art could encapsulate them so totally and so quickly and stuff. I still love the novella as a form, although I don't read them enough. And then also just, I don't know, there's really just everything is in there. There's also like weird gender stuff, which I think at the time I was in deep denial, but like...
Hey, you're so intrigued by it.
Yeah, actually this is pre-puberty though, it must have been, right? When are we in like sixth grade? Like,
no, that's 11. Yeah. That's solidly in puberty.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, not for me. I was a little guy. I was like the last person to grow.
Me too.
I hit it at 8 years old, y'all.
That stinks. Sorry.
I know.
Especially for girls.
That's why I'm 5'4".
Oh, that's all right. 5'4 is bigger than my whole family.
I'm 5'4". We're samesies.
We're samesies.
My sister is 5'2", and my mom is like 5 foot.
Yeah, I hit puberty. Because I was the
Do you want this other beer?
Oh, sure do.
Do it.
Please. It's going to be hard to open.
You got to crack open the last one because we're running out of time here.
Yeah. Chug.
No announcements taped to the board. So
questions. Hit me more questions. Let's go. Mice and Men. Loved it. And I'll make it faster.
It's okay.
Name. Yeah. Well, this is another question I've been liking lately. Without giving names, will you tell us about one of your mentors?
I have a graphic design professor that has become my friend. And it's not like we see each other every day or whatever. And
every 6 months?
No, not that rarely either. But like, although lately it has been like that, unfortunately. But I didn't study graphic design. I just took two courses. But this person's heart is so genuinely beautiful. And they just honestly, like, there's, like, a combination of his, like, actual genuine skill and stuff. But he's also a straight – to be honest, this is part of an answer for me as a gay boy. He's a straight guy that doesn't need me to reflect back, like, our culture's disgusting masculinity. So as, like, there's women and stuff, too, which I'm more prone to connect with, to be honest. But – the fact that he's like that he's such a tender, beautiful, open person, and yet he's like a great success, and he's in his 40s and stuff, which I'm 29, so it's not like a big difference, but still, I don't know, all of that, I'm just like always, I'm totally in love with him as a person, like in a way he probably doesn't realize. He's incredible. I think he's amazing in every way, as a person and as a like artist and a mentor.
That's really touching. That's a really great question. I've not heard that one before.
This is the first
You're
person
welcome.
That I felt like was a mentor.
Oh, yes. Great. Oh, my goodness. Now I have to think of a question. For some reason, I can't. Okay. Is there a book that you're putting off reading?
Oh, my God.
Or 500.
Or all the books.
The answer to me is like, if you
right.
won.
No. But I'll tell you, there's one that like feels the most like putting off reading type, where it's like I know that I'm putting off reading it. And it's – are you talking about novels or just kind of being anything? So – Samuel Delaney, who is a science fiction author, he's the father of science sci-fi criticism, as far as I can tell, like literary criticism. He has two books of essays that I've read about literary criticism for science fiction that are so good. I think even people who don't read science fiction could love them. He has a book about writing that my friend bought for me, and I started the first chapter, and it was so fucking incredible that I was like, I cannot read this book.
You're like, I'm not ready.
Not
put
while
it away.
I'm drawing. Not while like my main thing is trying to work on like art, like in the sense of drawing projects. Like, I need to be like a person who's ready to write when I'm reading this. Because he, like, the first chapter, he's like, your quote unquote new idea is bullshit if you haven't read the whole fucking, like, it's so good. He's like, if you haven't read the canon, then how do you know you're inventing something new? You think you're inventing something new, but it's actually just making the same thing somebody else made. Like, get it together, actually do your work. Like, it's like, but it's also like real advice as well in other ways. So it's like, I just love it. He's, and his writing, when he's writing nonfiction, is
the shit.
Incredibly precise. Hmm. And for people who care about this, I mean, he's gay, POC, a sci-fi critic. It's like somebody nobody recognizes at all. Like, that identity is just like not even like seen in our culture or whatever. So if you care about that in that way too, getting advice from somebody who's like a different perspective, I guess that would matter too. But to me, it's not even that. It's just like how stunningly this is written, and yet how also like get your shit together it is. And like, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm just going to put real facts in this bitch because I've been teaching for 40 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I really appreciate things that cut the bullshit. But it goes back to, I think, what we were talking about.
I don't
want to
be
earlier.
Cheerleading
like,
by a
this
book.
Is human, but this is also like how to be human, I guess. Or so this is writing, but this is like no bullshit.
Yeah, he's like, this is it. I've taught a lot of you guys. This is it. All right, whatever. And
well,
you're like, okay.
Greg, thank you so much for being here. If
yeah,
you
it's a pleasure.
Have tuned in within the past 5 minutes, because I forgot to tag in the middle, this is Ink and Worm, and we're on Radio Free Brooklyn. Join the community, check out all the cool stuff, emailers, pledge, buy us, you know, the support we need to, we'll continue what we're doing. And Empty Orchestra is next, and I'll leave you with a word, take it or leave it. Recapitulate. Just kidding. Technology is so hard.
Technology is really difficult. We'll just sing you out.
This week I know karaoke.
What are we singing?
I know.
I just did Poor Unfortunate Souls. I admit that in the past I've been a nasty.
Brilliant. Bye, guys.